Good evening, and welcome to Arts and Ideas. I'm Margot Stage. Tonight we begin our month-long visit to the little village of Jitvapur in India with producer Julian Crandall-Hollick. These 4 one-hour programs cover 10 days in the life of the village, as recorded by Julian and his crew in 1987. Many of you may have heard some of Julian's other reports and documentaries on India here on WGBH. I was curious about what drew him to India in the first place.
Well, it certainly isn't family ties in my case, and it's not an attempt to relive the Raj. Really, I went there because I hadn't been there. I'd been to almost every other country in the Middle East and Southeast Asia.
As a journalist?
As a journalist, it was a bit embarrassing not to have been there. Obviously, India affects different people different ways. I think a lot of journalists and writers, it forces them to sort of come face to face with themselves. You really can't pretend very much in India. Life is much more about survival. It's sort of lived on the edge in the raw. And also all the smells and the sounds and the sights, they're much more acute, they're much more vivid. You just can't escape them. There's no sort of place you can shut yourself off from the world. And you have to come to terms with all of this, and this heightens in turn, I think, your senses and your understanding of your own self and of others.
What made you decide to go and live in the Indian village, to go out of the cities and into Jitvapur?
We think of ourselves as urban civilizations, but in fact most people are village living. So therefore, studying the village becomes really an exercise in how two-thirds of the world live. And we have this, we have a tendency when we're dealing with the third world to reduce people because we don't understand their language and their culture. We try and interpret them in our terms and also to reduce them to sort of them versus us dichotomy, because that's the only way we know how to handle them. I wanted to go back to the village because I felt this was the one opportunity I had to actually go below the surface and to do something worthwhile as a radio journalist, having learnt about the country, to try and actually make these people live as people that listeners could identify with.
Who went with you?
Well, we took a team of 6 people. My wife, Martine, who is a photographer, our sound engineer, my fellow producer, Dean Capello, and then we also took this time 3 interpreters, 2 of whom had worked with us very extensively, called Rana Behel and Raj Chatterjee, who both speak different dialects and have, if you like, different also different talents. And then we took our, no trip would be complete without our driver. In this case, our driver is a man called Tiwari, who comes from the region but lives in Calcutta and has been with us for 4 years and has driven us through thick and thin and has apparently forgiven us the fact that we're not really very devout Hindus. And the only trouble with this crew, apart from the fact they all snore at night, which is has been recorded by our engineer, unfortunately, for our for posterity, is that the Indian portion of this crew have 2 things that you absolutely have to allow them, indulge them in. One is they have to be able to watch their Sunday morning television soap opera. And the second thing is that if there's a cricket match on somewhere in India, basically you have to realize they're not going to work very hard. They're going to find all manner of excuses to slink off behind hedgerows and listen, tune into the radio. It's absolutely pointless to schedule any work when there's either cricket or the soap opera on.
What did you learn living in the village?
Well, you see, we usually make the mistake of thinking just because someone is less materially developed than we are, that means they're also less developed socially, spiritually, culturally.
That's the mistake we make.
It's a terrible mistake because, for example, in India, people can be technically illiterate. They don't know how to read and write. That doesn't mean that they're culturally illiterate. Quite the contrary. They have retained everything by memory, and they can spout maybe 8 hours of an epic poem, which has been transmitted down through generations, maybe several hundred years. Now, can you recite for me 2 hours of Shakespeare or the Bible? No.
No. No way.
So, you know, the technical definitions that we use to describe somebody as underdeveloped, when you are in a village, you discover that really they have very little importance. I mean, there's so many cliches about India that they simply don't stand up when you actually go beneath the surface. I mean, I'll give you a very common one. The lot of women in India is supposed to be pretty bad, somewhere on level with cattle. Women are often depicted as never being allowed out of the home, having to do 16 hours work a day, the housework plus a job for which they don't get paid, which is true. And this village is also one of the most conservative areas in India, where girls are betrothed at the age of 5 or 6 and actually physically married off to live in the in-law's house, usually at the age of 11 to 13. I mean, these are beliefs that are always trotted out in Western portraits of India.
Mm-hmm.
The couple that had originally invited us to this village, called Devas and Chandai, which incidentally their names translated mean sun and moon. And Devas and Chandai both had outside work, one as an artist and one as a supervisor at a cooperative. And so the girls would go to primary school and they would run away. They'd run back home and they'd go and play. They'd play with the buffalo or they'd play with other kids or whatever. So I said to Chandai, you know, don't you want your daughters to grow up as educated as your boys? And she gave the traditional line, it's not really necessary because they're going to get married, etc., etc. And so they started to have a very friendly argument, right, totally unselfconsciously in front of the microphones about
this. The husband and wife.
The husband and wife, Devas and Chandai. But when you hear them arguing, you realize there's a tremendous amount of affection and a tremendous amount of mutual self-respect, which totally contradicts the cultural roles that they're projecting in their answers. When you are with them, you realize that that is a contradiction with the way that they love each other and treat each other as equals. None of that normally comes out in how we portray people in a country like India, this contradiction.
So what are we going to hear in this first program?
Well, I should say that the four programs are organized in exactly the way they were recorded. So you're going to start at the beginning, and I think we'd better leave some surprises.
Okay, I'm game. And finally, what does Gao mean?
Gao is a Sanskrit word meaning home.
And now, Gao. Life in an Indian village.
In its own way, Jodhpur is a pretty village. It's basically flat, broken only by palm trees and mango groves. A patchwork of fields. So many ponds I've lost count of them. Small clusters of mud and thatch huts. It's a surprisingly gentle place, typified by its colour. Muted greens and tans, and by its light. Silvers and burnished golds. There's only one way to come to Jodhpur, along the deeply rutted road from Madhubani. You can come by car, by bicycle, in a rickshaw, by bullock cart, or on foot. If you come in the evening, there always seems to be a festival in some of the compounds.
Uh-huh. In Divas's compound, his daughters and nieces are sitting cross-legged on the bare earth around a small fire. As they sing, they dip long reeds into the flames. These girls are singing to bring good health and good luck to their brothers. This is the festival of Samachakeva. The story goes that Jamuna, sister of Jamraja, the god of death, used to sing these songs to wish him long life. These young girls carry on Jamuna's tradition. The idols are in little wicker baskets in front of the fire. They represent Jamraja and his sister. As the song gathers momentum, the girls start to move slowly round the fire. According to the song, Jamraja's sister wanted to find a potter, so she asked directions to the potter's house. She wanted the potter to make two clay figures of herself and her brother. In return, she gave the potter a bag of gold. When Jamraja heard about this, he scolded his sister.
What a ridiculous swap! You gave him a bag of gold for two lousy clay figures?
But Jamuna defended the deal. Your good health is more important to me than all the gold in the world, dear brother. This is an upper caste festival, mostly Brahmins and Kshatriyas. Every compound seems to be serenading Jamraja and his sister tonight. In Rukmini Devi's compound, they'll talk deep into the night. Rukmini is a great storyteller, so she'll probably spin them a yarn about some prince or god. And then it'll be gossip, comparing notes, probably the price of fresh vegetables and fruit. The prices have gone through the roof because of recent floods. People go to bed early in the village. Once the fire's out, that's it. The crickets make a frightful racket in the rice paddies. The wind's picking up. Maybe it'll rain tomorrow. Everyone's asleep. Animals, humans, gods. Only the owls and the bats are about. Plus, a not-very-awake dog somewhere up near Surovdev Jha's compound. And the train. We used to wonder where that train came from. According to the map, it goes right the length of the Himalayas, like a girdle, and drops down here.
Saturday morning, 5 a.m. in the mango grove near the road.
There's no morning commute in the village. Nobody rushes to get to work. Same rhythm here, day after day. Night follows day, dawn follows night, sun follows moon, the heat licks up the dew. Birds and dogs are always the first, then the women. You never hear them as they glide silently along mud paths towards the fields and privacy. A baby cries, cold and hungry. A squadron of crows fly rudely past. Goats bleat. Someone in the cobbler's compound clears his throat of phlegm. And all the birds start rehearsals. One of the priests is off to the temple. Round it 7 times, always clockwise. Always a song about Krishna or Ram or Kali. It doesn't seem to matter which. There are 2 cars in the village. They're both owned by Brahmins who work in Madhubani. The recent floods almost destroyed the old wooden bridge that links the village to Madhubani. All that's left are the crossbeams. Someone's put a couple of planks across so that bullock carts, bicycles, and those 2 cars can get across. But it's not very reassuring. When we go over it, we always try to sing or argue or anything to take our minds off that gap into the water. Janak Mandal must be one of the most important people in the whole village. I don't think anyone would really think the day had begun until Janak had shuffled down and opened his tea stall. Someone had too much palm toddy last night. That one road is the spine of the village. Mud paths are its ribs. They connect the communities. Actually, you could also use the beehive analogy. There are all these little clusters of compounds, never quite touching, but linked by the paths. There must be miles of them, behind huts, in front of huts, beside ponds, along the sides of fields. The dew's especially heavy this morning. You can see the outline of our sandals, called chappals in India, on the mud path. That's the coil bird, waiting to ambush anyone walking near its mango tree. Buffaloes are wealth in the Indian countryside. They're slow but reliable. They pull the plough. They'll pull the cart into Madhubani. You can rely on them for milk every day. And of course they give dung. And dung is the poor man's electricity. Can't cook without dung. And if you can't afford a buffalo, there's always the goat. They call that the poor man's cow. But goats are destructive. They eat everything in reach. If you plant a sapling, they'll tear out the roots. Goats may be a poor man's cow, but they're no friend of rural development. There's no such thing as a private bathroom here. You do everything in public. There are about 12 water pumps in the village, the type you have to crank the water up. That's Binda Devi washing under the pump. Somehow she does it without ever taking off her blouse or sari. Indians are fanatical about washing. It doesn't matter whether you're poor or rich or how scarce water is. People are always washing once, twice or more every day. Binda and most of the villagers still use a neem twig to brush their teeth. Apparently it's as good as a toothbrush and toothpaste, and a lot cheaper. A few words with the neighbour. A silent prayer to the sun, and Binda Davis off to her compound to face feeding the family. paths are for man and animals. Rukmini Devi is picking kuki flowers to take to the Kali temple. Her buffaloes grazing quietly and with great concentration, while she picks the bright yellow flowers. This is how dishes used to be washed before we invented all those liquid soaps. You take the ashes from last night's fire, mix them with a little water, and then use the mixture to scrub the pots and pans. It's an incredibly effective scourer, but you'll never see a man doing the dishes in the village. They just sit by and watch. Devas's compound backs onto a pond. The mud path's always wet because this is where Devas and his family wash. The women are already up, sweeping the compound after last night's festivities. Devas's wife Chandai sweeps the mud floor. Her daughter Prativa is starting to grind turmeric between two stones into cooking paste. No cuisine art here. It'll take her a good half an hour to make 4 ounces of paste with the right consistency. Once again, it's the women who seem to be doing everything. In Devas's case, this isn't really fair. He's about as liberated as any man can be in the village. But even if you're enlightened, there are many things a man automatically assumes is woman's work. Devas asked me to come into one of the huts. Along one wall are several 5-foot-tall containers covered with dull brown clay. Above them on a shelf, a gaudy picture of a god, edged in Christmas tinsel.
So this is your god?
Yes, my family god.
And your family god is which? Shakti?
Shakti. Durga.
Durga. Mm. And you come and worship Shakti every day?
Every
morning?
Every morning and evening.
And evening. Yes. And in this room you store all your food?
Yes.
You store rice?
Pulse, yeah. This is a box.
What do you store in the box? Saris?
Sari. Metal,
yeah.
Thali, yes.
So this is the storeroom. The storeroom and the family temple. The family shrine. And you store your clothes in here. Mm. Yeah.
Outside, Chandai is cleaning rice. She throws the rice up in a flat wicker basket. When it settles, she picks out the black and bad grains and throws them towards the chickens running at the open edge of the compound.
Now that's not rice. What is that that she's winnowing there?
That is dal, you know?
That's dal?
Yes.
So she's winnowed the rice?
The rice.
And the dal.
Devas and Chandai have an acre of land, but they don't grow much food. They use the land to graze their buffalo on. Things like dal or rice they buy in the village or in Madhubani. Devas is 37, Chandai 32. They were married when he was 13 and she was 8, but didn't live together under the same roof until 5 years later. You're engaged formally to be married when you're a child. Then you rarely get married when you become a teenager. Divas and Chandai means sun and moon in Maithili Hindi, the local dialect. They have two sons, Sohan aged 10 and Mohan aged 14, and three daughters, Muchan who's 5, Prativa who's 8, and Tira who's 12. The compound consists of 7 one-room mud huts, each hut's about 12 by 6. One hut serves as the cookhouse. The one Divas just took me into was shrine and storeroom rolled into one. Divas, Chandai and all 5 kids sleep in another hut, leaving 4 huts for Divas' mother and his brother and his family. Divas' father sleeps under the stars on a rope bed with a canopy of matted palm leaves over him. It's only 8, but Chandai is already preparing lunch for the family. Only children have breakfast. It's prepared the night before and served at dawn. The lunch is more like our brunch. You eat it at 10 and then go off to work. The rice and dal are now clean, so it's onto the pots and pans.
So she takes some straw from the roof, which will act as the sort of abrasive. Mixes it with a bit of mud. Namaste, Chandi. She's using ashes as the abrasive from last night's fire. Bottom was absolutely black. Just comes right off. So you're using Scotch Brite or something.
The huts look very solid, but Diva says they have to change the bamboo frame every year because it rots.
So when do you do that? What part of year do you start rebuilding? Or is it all the year?
May. I changed it in May, last May.
In May?
Yes, I changed it. Even the roof, I changed in May.
It's a lot of work. So you changed all these 3 huts? Yeah. So you just completely take them down, or you just repair piecemeal as they stand?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This frame will be there, but he will change these things.
Uh-huh. So the frame will stand and you'll just replace the uprights one by one. Mm. And then you have to put the mud on how often? Every 10 years, you said?
No. How many times? 2 years, 3 years. Sometimes we change it within a year.
Yeah.
Or sometimes it is after 2 years or after 3 years. You know. It depends on.
The cookhouse seems to be missing one wall, and the wind's blowing smoke right back into Chandai's face as she squats over the earthen stove.
Now, what happened to that wall in the cookhouse?
During the flood, you know, that wall has collapsed.
So you have to rebuild it now?
Yes, I have to.
When are you going to rebuild it?
Diva says the grasses to rebuild the wall with have been soaked by the recent floods and have to dry out.
Because if you need any labor, I've got some extra labor that can help you. He's not a good worker.
To get the fire started, Chandai uses the husks from the rice. She builds the fire up with gohani, long wooden skewers of dried cow dung mixed with straw. Chandai buys gohani, although she could make them herself. She has the buffaloes. But she also works outside the home, so it's cheaper to buy them in the village.
Mm-hmm.
A chula is basically an earthenware stove on the ground. Chandai puts the wood or the cow dung logs in through an opening in the bottom. On the top surface, there are two inverted openings, a bit like miniature volcanoes. On one of them, she's put a big tin pot for the rice. On the other, a pot for the lentils. The trouble is, now the fire's really going. The wind's blowing the smoke straight into Chandai's face. And cooking like this means squatting beside the chula for 2 hours.
This really is a most uncomfortable form of cooking for the poor cook. She's lucky if she won't be asphyxiated after she's cooked like this. It's a smoky world here.
Yeah.
There's an obvious answer, and that's a smokeless chula. You simply add a tin chimney onto the stove and through the roof. Trouble is, they cost 1,000 rupees or $70, and they're only available to the Harijans.
You have to buy the turmeric?
Yes.
Very expensive? Yeah?
15 or 20 rupees per kilo.
Per kilo. Is this the turmeric here? Oh no, that's just a stone.
A stone also.
And these are your red chilies here? And this?
Dhania.
And she'll grind all those up.
Most Brahmins in India are strictly vegetarian. Not so in Mithila. Devas eats meat once a month, fish or goat, although usually in town and not at home, where it could cause problems within the upper caste community. I asked Raja, one of our interpreters, about this. Raja's a Bengali Brahmin, but somewhat lapsed.
I thought Brahmins weren't supposed to eat meat.
Yeah.
Nothing against it?
No, nothing against it.
Yeah. Tiwari won't eat meat.
He's vegetarian. Some of the Brahmins are vegetarians.
Jyadatar meat or fish khate.
Oh, here all the Brahmins, you know, they're very much fond of fish and meat. Because they are, Brahmins, peculiar thing, in Brahmins there is Shakta people, you know, the Kali worshipper.
Yeah.
And they're very much fond of fish, meat and everything, you know. And there will be some kind of Brahman, those are Vaishnavs. They don't take fish or meat.
Chandai is about to make us fried pumpkin leaves. The leaves are dipped in batter made of a local rice flour and then fried.
No, the drop is wasted.
Divas' mother's telling a story to Muchan at the other end of the compound. Chandai's finished cleaning the rice. That's cooking away now on the chula. All that's left is the rice paste for the pumpkin leaves. And while we all wait for the treat, the kids are playing tag in between the huts. The pumpkin leaves are rolled in the rice batter, deep fried. They taste delicious. Chandai is almost suffocated by the smoke.
You're in favour of smokeless chulas, right?
You're listening to Gao, Life in an Indian Village. This is Arts and Ideas on 89.7 FM, WGBH in Boston.
Good swab, yeah.
Vijay the Pandit is unique in Jitwapur. He can speak five words of French that he picked up somehow. He's a big, brown, barrel-chested man, the local priest at the Kali temple. Vijay, of course, is a Brahmin. Most days he's dressed in dhoti, a pair of plastic sandals that appear to be fashioned out of the retreads of tires from a truck. He wears the sacred thread from shoulder to waist, and his head is shaved except for a tiny topknot in the back of the crown. He usually wears a flaming pink shirt.
In the south of Mithila is Ganges, in the north is Himalayas, in the west is Gandak, in the east is the Koshki. Three rivers and the mountain.
Koktik dhoti patuak saga tirhut git bare anurag sundar amot phoka makhan khirsa ke larvi pakman amot je itham amak je pathi pare amot ke bad pradhanta den chi sundar amot phoka makhan
is saying the kind of food we eat is something you can never find anywhere else. The kind of clothes we wear are superior to anything else which is available outside. So it's essentially a great deal of flattery about the way of life, the clothing, the eating, the surroundings of Mithila are the most superior you can find anywhere.
On the left-hand side, when you cross the bridge that almost isn't a bridge, that links Jitwapur to Madhubani, there's a sawmill. Great stumps of oak, teak, poplar on the grass. A couple of blades powered by diesel, slicing up tree trunks into planking. The giant belt powering the blade has absolutely no tension left. Like just about every piece of equipment in this country, it goes on way past its normal life. The owner of the sawmill is Bibekananda Jha. He used to teach physics at a local college. He says he had an accident and decided to try the timber business.
Where's all your wood come from? Local. It all comes locally?
Yeah.
Do you make a good living out of this?
No problem.
It's a sawmill maker, but does the sawmill make a good profit?
लेकिन हम लोग इसी से जो है सो अच्छा खाना पीना खा लेते हैं कोई दिक्कत नहीं हमारे साथ.
Yes, if you can earn more profit if you invest more. But I have a limited way of investing. But somehow I am going on.
हमको इसी में संतोष है साहब. हम लोग को कोई दिक्कत नहीं है. कोई बड़ा आदमी बन जाएंगे. पैसे से ये तो अंदाज नहीं किया है. ये है ठीक है. यहाँ के आदमी ऐसा है कि भाई जितना ही मिला उतना खा पी के अपना.
I don't want to be a very big money person.
Do you live in Jitwapur?
No.
Where do you live?
I am from Mangrauni. Mangrauni? Never village, Mangrauni.
Uh-huh. Most of the people that work here, though, they come from Jitwapur?
Yes.
Yeah.
There are two people who come from Jitwapur.
Uh-huh. Now, who buys your wood principally? Is it individuals or is it businesses?
Business concern wale hain jo Rajasthan se aate hain, wo bhi apna aisa dukaan laga karke bechte hain. So, dukaan laga kar bechne se ye hai ki hamare yahan kharidte hain aur apna le jaate hain wahan dukaan.
Most of the buyer from Rajasthan, you know.
They come all the way from Rajasthan?
Yes.
Yes.
All the way here?
Yeah. My God.
Now, if you've got any, you know, you have in this state, you've had bad floods. Do you have any problem getting a good supply of fresh wood?
Train band ho gaya tha, yahi supply hui thi, sir.
Only problem that train was not working at that time, you know, train, you know, railway. Transport was not working perfectly. That is the only problem.
Vivekananda buys most of the wood through a broker. Brahmins aren't usually businessmen, but Bibekananda sees nothing odd in running the sawmill. He's probably a pretty shrewd businessman too, because he sells all the wood shavings and even the sawdust to villagers for their cooking fires.
Adiya ke sa.
7 o'clock. It's already dark. Night falls very quickly in India. One moment it's dusk, the next, quite literally, it's night. Under a peepal tree in the Harijan quarter, three untouchable women from the village of Pandal, 3 miles away, are singing and painting tattoos on parchment. This is what they do for a living. The names are Raiful, Kumte, and Chanda.
But do you normally do it on paper or do you do it on your body?
They used to do on the body. Yeah. This kind of design.
I see. Yeah. I see. Do you do it on other people's arms as tattoos or only on your own?
No, they will do it on other people's arms. It is their
and they will then pay them for that as a form of beauty mark, decoration or whatever.
Right.
So do you go around from village to village doing this?
Yes. We are going from one village to another village.
Well, all around Madhubani?
Yes, around Madhubani.
And is this some form of water paint or is it some form of indelible ink you use here? It's lamp black.
It's
lamp black. It's lamp black. It's sort of
a soot.
Then they will mix little milk with it. Then they will make that.
I see.
When they paint, they use this.
Mm-hmm.
But when they will do it...
Come, put some on Raja Babu. I see.
Some kind of pin, you can see it.
Yeah?
Some kind of pin. Bunch of pins here. There are 5 or 6 pins here.
Okay, yeah.
When the body
about five or six pins bound together in black. Yeah, I see. Do you make a good living doing this?
Sometimes 100 rupees one day, sometimes 40, 30, sometimes without anything.
What happens when you go without anything? And where do you sleep at night then? You sleep in the villages you go to?
Actually, they are nomads, you know. They have very temporary arrangement for the sleeping. Mm-hmm. At present, they are staying at Romar, nearby.
Is business good? Is business good?
Nowadays the business is little dull.
Yeah?
In
why?
Earlier days, we have good business.
Why is it dull at the moment?
Nobody is interested about the body doctor anymore.
Yeah?
Hero heroine ke bhegi aap godna godra mainge to kharab
pehle budhi aura sab thi to jyada gudati thi ab naya naya aura sab aayi hai itna nahi gudati hai
itna nahi gudati.
The fashion has changed, you know. Young women, they are not at all interested with this tattoo thing anymore.
Are your customers who you used to have and you still have, are they all Harijans or the people from other castes?
Most of them Harijan, but we used to do for all the castes.
What were you singing about while you were doing those tattoos?
Actually, while they're singing, the motto of the singing is to please the customer. First thing.
So what are you telling the customer?
No, they're telling that if you do the godna, you know, you will look good, you know, the fortune will come to you, this and that.
You're hustling, you're trying to sell your... You're doing some pretty good selling pitch there. Telling me that he's going to look beautiful and he's going to marry a beautiful princess.
Yes.
All that sort of thing.
If you do it, then you will be fortunate, you know. Good thing will happen to you, this and that.
Okay.
Another thing, when while they do this pain thing, you know, there is some kind of pain.
Pain, yeah, because you're pricking, yeah. you're pricking.
Get rid of that pain, you know, they draw the attention of the customer, you know, through these songs. You know.
Make him think it's pleasure while in fact it's pain.
The tattoo ladies had finished for the night, so we walked back through the village to the road. Someone was ringing bells in the Kali temple across the stream.
Sunday morning, 6 a.m. near the cobbler's quarters.
The villagers were right. There is rain in the air. Everyone seems on edge, in a hurry to start the day, off to the fields, opening the tea stall, getting the cycle rickshaw ready for the first customers to Madhubani.
Shrantam samre chintya sthitam ravanam chagrato drishtva yuddhaye samupasthitam devatascha samam.
On the edge of the mango grove where we live, our colleague Himani Kapila has spread a tarpaulin on the damp grass and begun her morning mantra or prayer.
Agastayo Bhagavan Rishi Ram Ram Mahabaho Shrinu Vayam Sanatanam Yena Sarva Narin Vatsay Samare Vijayishasi Aditya Hridayam Punyam Sarva Shatru Vinashanam Chinta Shok Prashamana
Ramjit Jha lives just opposite us on the village road. He's very old, very tall and very thin, dressed in white pajamas. Outside his hut there's a 6-foot-high brick column with a marble plaque announcing the dedication of the road to Ramji's father, Garib Das Bhatt, for fighting for India's freedom from the British.
Our family is a three-generation freedom fighter. My father was a freedom fighter, myself also a freedom fighter, and my brother also was a freedom fighter. During the freedom fighting movement, I gave away near about 22 acres of land. This road has been given to my father's name. The name of the road is Garib Das Bhatt. Swatantra Senani, Garib Das Bhatt, he was my father. And this particular stone or the ceremony was opened by then railway minister, Mr. Kedar Pandey.
जो उसकी चीज थी तब मैं खरीद किया इस ग्राउंड पर वो मेरा फेल हो गया तो यही 4 acres जमीन हम इसे लेकर के इस पर बसे
हैं. I have only 4 acres of land at present. And this house, it has been, I built this house with the help of government help. And I also get the freedom fighting pension from the government.
Well, when did you start freedom fighting?
Aap kaun saal se freedom fighting shuru kiya?
My 1930s.
I started this in 1930.
In 1930?
Yes.
And what did you do?
Tha jo videshi vastu bahishkar.
At that time, there was a movement to shun the foreign clothes, you know. Burn down
Swadeshi.
The foreign clothes, yeah. It's some kind of Swadeshi. And in 1942, I joined that Quit India movement, Bharat Chhoro.
Pitaji, humare All India Congress ka delegate, 1920 ishvi se 40 ishvi.
And my father was the delegate to the Indian Congress from 1920 to 1940.
Did you fight against the British? Did you take up arms against them?
Nahin, satyagraha.
No, I don't believe in Sashastra Sangram. I believe in Gandhi's ideology of Ahimsa and Satyagraha, non-cooperation.
Why do you believe that's more effective than taking up arms?
So, Satyagraha, unhone kaha, agar astra shastra ka hum vyavahar karenge, to hum bahut sataye jayenge. इसलिए बहुत मृत्यु का घाट उतर जाएंगे क्योंकि उसके पास बड़े-बड़े औजार और अस्त्र हैं
गांधी जी said to us that if we take up arms we cannot fight against the very organized army of the British so there will be lots of deaths you know but if we take the non cooperation and this very peaceful movement of satyagraha then only can fight out the British from India
did you hate the British then
गांधी जी का उस समय में आह्वान हुआ जिसमें हम लोग साथ हो गए और सत्याग्रह।
Oh yes, actually we hate British regime here because they're exploiting us, they're destroying the system of our own system here. You know, that's why I hate them.
आपस में फूट डाल कर।
Actually, we were against the British rule, not against the British people.
So you didn't hate the British?
Yeah.
You just hate the British rule.
Yeah, British.
डालो शासन करो।
Yes, I didn't hate the British, but I hated the British rule here.
Well, independence came 40 years ago, and you had lots of ideals when India became independent. Have those ideals been fulfilled?
लेकिन मुझे भरोसा है कि ये धीरे-धीरे सब मिट जाएगा और स्वतंत्रता का फल जो है उसे लोग प्राप्त करेंगे.
Yes, one great thing that we are free now. We are independent. It is a new state, and I have a belief that in course of time the development will go on.
So you don't feel let down by the fact that India has maybe not progressed as well economically or in other ways since independence?
और जहाँ लोग एक गंजी और एक मिर्जई पहना करते थे, वहाँ अभी कमीज और कोट और बड़े-बड़े सामान लोग इस्तेमाल करते हैं.
I think there is a great change in Indian lifestyle because I saw at that time in the British period most of the people were naked. At present they are wearing clothes, they have house, you know, at least they have education, you know. This kind of development is happening around us, you know. So it is progressing.
और ये रोड़ी सब जो है जैसा भी आप कार से आए हैं आना दुश्वार था यहाँ बड़े बड़े गड्ढे और तीन लाइन था
At my time when India was not free you know the road condition here in Madhumani was worst you know only the mud roads you know and there were no any concrete roads over here but at present we have the concrete roads at least you people came from the city by car on this road another thing in our village particularly the standard of living of the Harijans also developed they have their home they have their small portion of lands and other things you know and they have the education also
but still isn't it a pity that there's still so much caste conflict in the country and in the state in particular
हरिजनों उद्धार गांधी जी के का आह्वान पर हुआ जो जबकि कराची कांग्रेस में अंग्रेजों ने अपना अकाउंट दिया जो मैं आपका समर्थन सारे हिंदुस्तान में नहीं है
नो दिस काइंड ऑफ कास्ट कॉन्फ्लिक्ट्स वी डोंट हैव हियर इन मधुबनी वी डोंट हैव एनी काइंड ऑफ कास्ट फाइट्स यू नो बट वी हैव सम काइंड ऑफ कस्टम ये कस्टम्स इन बिटवीन द डिफरेंट क्लासेस
जैसे ये हरिजन है ये इस तरह से हमारे बरंडे पर नहीं आ सकता था उस समय
इन द ओल्ड टाइम यू नो दिस मैन हु इज स्टैंडिंग इन फ्रंट ऑफ मी इज अ हरिजन ही कैन नॉट एंटर माय हाउस बट ही इज स्टैंडिंग ऑन द बरंडा ऑफ माय हाउस
जूता पहन के नहीं चल सकता था सामने
एट दैट टाइम हरिजन कैन नॉट वेयर द शूज और एनी काइंड ऑफ चप्पल एंड अदर थिंग्स बट दे आर यूजिंग इट नाउ
And would you eat with this harijan here?
सब खाते हैं पीते हैं और जहाँ तहाँ सब बात होती है हरिजनों उधार हो गया हरिजन और हम सब एक हैं
We can eat with them. We are staying with them.
तुम्हारा वचन तुम एक बार मेरा सब कुछ छीन लेने के लिए अपने पीले चरित्र का जाल बिछा चुकी हो सितारा अपना बेटा मुझसे छीनने के लिए तुम झूठ नहीं बोलोगे और मेरा इस लायक नहीं है कि बहू बनकर मेरे घर में आए क्यों
संडे इवनिंग इन मधुबनी Instead of Masterpiece Theatre or the Sunday movie, people sit in the entrance to the TV store, watching on the colour TV the Hindi soap opera at 9 p.m. Most people are indoors. In the village, they've finished supper and are talking quietly around the fire, before curling up in blankets to sleep on hard wooden beds or on the bare earth. There are a few people about in Madhubani. Even at this late hour, film music's blaring from one storefront. That and the silver screen in the blackened streets are usually enough to get some passerby to slow down and stop and watch for a few minutes. Bicycles and rickshaws are harmless enough. The only danger at this hour is being hit by a wad of red beetle juice spat out from an upstairs window.
Village was written and produced by Julian Crandall-Hollick and Dean Capello. Recording assistants in India were Raja Chatterjee, Rana Behel and Himani Kapila. Special thanks to V.G. Srinivasan, Vyasji, Bijay Tiwari, Gauri Misra and to Divas and the villagers of Jitwapur. Living on the Edge is a production of IBA, Independent Broadcasting Associates, and is made possible with major grants from the Rockefeller and Ford Foundations, the Carnegie Corporation of New York, and with support from the Massachusetts Council on the Arts and Humanities. I'm Deepika Roy.
And I'm Margot Stage. I hope you'll join us again for Arts and Ideas next Sunday at 5 as our visit to Jitwapur continues.